You're listening to episode 321 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. On this podcast, we explore the very nature of our minds, how they work, and how they shape our life experience. We believe that life is finite and precious. We know that our minds provide a powerful lens through which we experience the world. And we choose to take responsibility for building psychological strength to craft a life experience that's worth living. I'm Dr. April, a social cognitive psychologist and a life design strategist, and I'm so glad that you are here. Friends, this week we are speaking with a man by the name of Doug Knoll. And this is interesting because when I heard about him, he was pitched to me as a conflict resolution expert. Dug into his background, he had an incredible wealth of expertise to share with us. But it's really interesting because I feel like I need to forewarn you. Yes, you will learn how to navigate conflict in this episode. Absolutely, you will walk away with skills that will help you in some of your most difficult situations, whether it's professionally or personally. You're going to develop some incredible skills from this episode. But this episode isn't about necessarily like, how do you frame up the perfect argument? Or how do you make sure you communicate effectively and clearly? Instead, this episode is a masterclass in emotional intelligence and the role of emotions in conflict, and how as we get smarter and more adept at managing our own emotional landscape, how we can use that to help us when we're in conflict with other people. This is an absolute masterclass in emotions, and I'm so thrilled that you're here, because if there's one skill, I say this about a lot of things, but this is one of those foundational ones. If there's one skill that will just ripple over into everything else that you do and improve your life markedly across the board, becoming more adept at recognizing and labeling and managing your own emotions is one of them. And so this, like I said, this episode is a masterclass. A quick bit about Doug. Doug left a successful career as a trial lawyer to become a peacemaker. His calling is to serve humanity, and he executes his calling at many levels. He's an award-winning author, teacher, trainer, and a highly experienced mediator. Doug's work carries him from international work to helping people resolve deep interpersonal and ideological conflicts to training inmates, people who have been given a sentence of life in prison, training them to become peacemakers and mediators in maximum security prisons. His latest book, Deescalate: How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less, won the Book Excellence Award in Leadership and is now available in 4 languages. I'm so thrilled for you all to meet Doug. This is such an incredibly valuable episode, so let's get to it. Doug, I'm so excited that you are here with us on this episode of the podcast, because I think we're going to get into some things that are very practically applicable for people as they are navigating maybe relationships with people in their personal lives, in their professional lives, some of the difficult things that we all have to navigate day to day. So thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I hope that I can illuminate some myths and give some people some new ideas about how to navigate the world that will make their lives so much simpler and easier.
I love it. And you have this cool background. You know, I intro'd you earlier in this episode, but background as a trial lawyer, that's not nothing, right? You've faced some serious challenge. You've had to go through some difficult, conversations and situations, and it makes you a really great person for us to talk to about how we can have some of these more difficult conversations when maybe we're in conflict with people or we don't agree with them, which how much of that is going on these days?
Everywhere, isn't it? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I don't want to get into politics, but the political polarization is driving families apart, communities apart. It's horrible.
It is. And we all thought it was bad with the political situation. And then COVID was like, hold on, let me pile on top of that. And now there's a lot around, I mean, you don't have to go very far to find 5 or 10 topics that people are very emotional about that they believe in. You know, so it's not without warrant that emotion comes in. We understand why, but you find yourself in these situations where people don't agree and it's hard to navigate.
It is until you learn how to do it. And then it's very easy.
And that's amazing.
The trick is just learning how to do it. And it takes some emotional and psychological strength to be able to do what I teach, because you have to fill your own needs from within inside and not look to other people to validate you, at least in the beginning, because your job is going to be to validate and listen them into existence.
And oh, there's so much there.
Once you do that, everything changes.
There's so much there. Okay. Let's maybe start. Let's start with that piece that, you know, something we talk about a lot on this podcast is what is inside of our circle of control and what is outside of our circle of control. And largely the stuff that falls inside of our circle of control is stuff about us, like things that we can do for ourselves. And you mentioned a really important one there about regulating our own emotional situation or making sure that we're okay. Can we kind of start there, maybe? What does that look like in terms of us setting ourselves up for success for these conversations where there's some conflict and, you know, the yucky conversations.
The yucky conversations. All right. So first of all, just by way of background, I got into all of this as a peacemaker and a mediator. And I have a law degree, of course, and a master's degree. And my job is walking into very intense conflicts, usually where there's a lot of money at stake, and having to help people reconcile and rebuild relationships. So family business conflicts, corporate disputes, community disputes, stuff like that. And almost always, people would rather shoot each other with AK-47s than sit down at the table and talk. Mm-hmm. And my work has taken me into maximum security prisons, where I train murderers to be peacemakers. So it's a wide, broad scope of experience that I have. But what I've learned is something very simple. And that is that when we start paying attention to our emotions in a very specific way, we can really change ourselves and change the people around us. And what the science is showing us, and the brain scanning studies around all of this are showing, that when we learn how to label emotions and reflect them back, two things happen in the brain. One, the ventrolateral prefrontal cortex becomes activated. And two, at the same time, in a reciprocally opposite or inverse correlation, the emotional centers of the brain, primarily the amygdala and other portions of the limbic system, are inhibited. So you literally, when you are listening, I've used this term, listening others into existence, when you learn how to do this, which I can describe for everybody in a moment, when you do this, you are literally lending your prefrontal cortex to this upset person, this angry person, for the 35 to 90 seconds it takes for that person's prefrontal cortex to come back online and for them to calm down. And it works every single time without failure. Doesn't matter what the culture is. The human brain is the human brain. And it's all based on neuroscience. And it's absolutely magical the way that it works. And it's completely counterintuitive to everything we think we know about managing emotions. So if we start with ourselves, because that's where your question is, the first thing that we learn is how to label our own emotional experience. So for example, let's just say that I'm angry. So what I will do is I'll say, I'm really angry right now, but I don't stop there. I'm really angry. I'm really frustrated. I feel disrespected. I feel unappreciated. I feel like I've been treated unfairly. I feel like nobody's listening to me and I'm completely ignored. And that makes me really sad. And I feel abandoned. And I feel a little shame and humiliation around all of this. And I don't feel loved and accepted. I don't feel connected. And that's really pissing me off.
Mm. Are you actually saying this out loud to this person, or is this what you're doing internally?
I will
for yourself?
If I have to, but if I'm in a place where I can't, then I'm going to silently tell myself that. And the effect of doing that is what the brain scanning study shows, is that I completely get myself back online. This is all based on the work of two really prominent two people who have been very influential in my thinking, Matthew Lieberman at UCLA and Lisa Feldman Barrett, who's a neuroscientist psychologist at Northeastern. Now, I don't know if they've, I don't know if they know each other or they've talked about each other, but Lieberman's brain scanning studies on affect labeling, coupled with Feldman Barrett's work on the constructed theory of emotions, gives us a picture of how all this works and why it works the way that it does. And it leads us to a very simple tool. Three steps: ignore the words, read the emotions, reflect back the emotions with a simple you statement.
Hmm.
So if it's a third party situation, if you're really angry, April, I might say something like this. Oh, April, man, April, you are really pissed off. You're really angry. You're frustrated. You're mad. You don't feel like you're being listened to. You're being completely ignored. And you're really anxious about all of this.
That's interesting, though, because let's think about what you are and are not doing. And you alluded to it, but I think it's worth making it.
Sure, make it clear.
Like really pushing into it and making it abundantly clear. What you're saying right there is like, we're in a situation where I'm really angry. There's any number of reasons why I might have been, right? We could have had a disagreement about politics.
Right.
Maybe I think you were in a professional relationship and you didn't hold up your side of a project.
It could be anything.
Maybe it's a personal relationship and you've done something that, you know, upset me for some reason. What you're saying is you're not trying to understand the words they're saying.
Correct.
Response is right.
Fact, you ignore them. The words are not important.
That's hard for people
because
you get into that situation, you're like, but, and you want to pick apart and you want to like prove and you want to understand and push in to the meaning behind the argument they're making.
That's right. And that you ignore all of that. It's just white noise.
Wow.
It's white noise. You completely ignore everything they're saying for at least a minute and a half because you heard it all before. Now, here's the thing. Your need to listen and to calm somebody else down has to be greater than your own need to be validated and listened to. If you have a huge need, your ego is demanding that you be heard right now. You're going to have to really work hard at ignoring their words and listening to the other person's emotions and reflecting them back. This just makes it a little more challenging. But here's the thing, April. When you master this skill, and believe me, it doesn't take long. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks of practice to master this. When you've mastered this skill, when anybody is upset or angry or emotional, whether it's a 2-year-old or a 40-year-old acting like a 2-year-old, you can calm them down in less than 90 seconds. And inside yourself, you feel this enormous, calm, serene presence that is never rattled. And you can walk into any situation and know exactly what to say, how to say it, and when to say it without fail. Because you understand that people are emotional, not rational beings.
Yeah.
It's huge. Huge.
There's an enormous, the underpinning of what you're talking about here, I love how much we're talking about emotion here. The underpinning of what you're talking about here is, you know, a component of emotional intelligence and just our ability to label emotions can be so difficult for people because we get into this situation where, how are you feeling, good or bad?
Right.
Good and bad are judgments. They're not emotions, right?
So what's going, let's unpack that a little bit. This is the crisis that we find ourselves in. For thousands and thousands of years, we've been fed this lie that we're rational beings. And it's a lie. Neuroscience today says we're emotional, not rational.
Okay, I just want to let that sink in for people because that felt like a big deal. Like we are not rational, emotional. We're emotional.
We are 98% emotional and only 2% rational.
Oh, but I'm so rational.
The moment you grab that insight and can understand it, everything changes because people no longer act weird. They act normal, no matter how emotional. Because they're just being emotional. No big deal. The problem is that we have this culture that says that emotions are bad, they're weak, they're irrational, they're woo-woo, they're touchy-feely, you know, they're feminine, you know. I mean, think about it.
All these horrible things, right?
I know, it's awful.
I say that in jest. I know you don't.
I understand that.
But
think about 2-year-olds. Her little two or 3-year-old child goes running outside, falls, skins his or her knee. What's that child told?
Oh, don't cry.
Don't cry.
It's okay.
It's okay. It doesn't hurt. be a big girl, be a big boy. Big boys don't cry. Mm. That child is being denied his or her emotional experience and is being told that emotions are bad and that it's not good to be emotional. And so parents, rather than being emotional coaches, are emotional abusers. Because the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study out of San Diego, which is a longitudinal study that's now been going on for about 15 years, shows emotional abuse is the number one cause of addiction, criminal behavior, antisocial behavior, depression, suicide, comorbidity later in life, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, cancer, all these things all come from the emotional abuse that everybody suffers in childhood from parents who don't know any better. They could be very loving parents, but they're still emotionally invalidating their child. So when we get into adulthood, we are not emotionally mature. And when you ask somebody what they're feeling, you say, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a number one sign that they are not emotionally mature.
Yeah.
And everybody's that way. I used to be. And what drove me into this is I was getting paid big dollars to help people calm down in major conflicts. And I had to learn a way to figure this out. And I stumbled on this by accident. And then a couple of years later, Lieberman's study came out and I said, oh, well, there's the science. Cool.
Yeah.
I got to work on.
Yeah.
So if we just change the way that we think about human nature and stop this rationality stuff, stop expecting a 2-year-old to be rational, stop expecting a 16-year-old to be rational, stop expecting your spouse to be rational. We're all emotional. And we all have a deep need to be heard emotionally, to be validated at a deep emotional level. Deep need, because none of us have ever experienced emotional safety.
Mm.
And that emotional safety is the secret to trust, loyalty, love, and intimacy. And the moment we can create that emotional intimacy by listening another person into existence, by listening to and reflecting their emotions, everything changes.
What does emotional safety look like? I mean, we're all running around not having experienced it, right? I mean, we've all heard these things. Right. We as parents have said these things probably in the last week. We've said these things with the best of intentions or maybe unintentionally, right? What does it look like, whether it's with a kid or somebody else, to provide that emotional safety?
When you provide emotional safety, your child will open up to you. First of all, your child will grow, develop their own emotional competency very, very quickly. I mean, like 4 and 5-year-olds just eat this stuff up. And what happens in emotional safety is it's safe to be emotional. It's okay to be angry and upset. It's okay to be jealous. It's okay to be envious. It's okay to have an emotions only last, you know, they last less than a minute anyways. It's a passing biophysiological response. It's okay to have these feelings. And if we're parents, we are coaching our children through their emotional experiences, helping them build what Feldman Barrett talks about as an emotional database. So they can associate affective experience with words that are abstractly symbolize or represent the biophysiological response we're having in the body. We don't get that from our parents because our parents don't know how to do it. And as a result, I mean, think about it. If you emotionally invalidate a little boy by telling him not to cry, that crying is bad, that emotions are bad, what's going to happen when he's 15 years old and wants to have and start gets interested in girls and wants to sort of start thinking about having a different kind of a relationship, a more intimate relationship with a girl? What we're going to see is a train wreck.
Mm.
And that's what happens. Same thing with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would happen if you had a 15-year-old who grew up in an emotionally safe environment where emotions were something that he understood to be part of his hidden genius and that he was a master of them? He could articulate his emotions. He can reflect other people's emotions. And he felt totally comfortable in emotional circumstances. And he could take a girl and listen to her into existence, reflect her emotions. What kind of a relationship is that going to be as opposed to the normal relationship?
Yeah. And you think about like, right, the two-way street of that, where he has that experience and understands what that means to have emotions that are valid and accepted and perfectly fine and normal, no matter what they are. For that other person, that might be a very new experience. And right. After, I mean, what a gift to be able to provide another person as an example of this is actually okay. And you are safe and okay here with me.
Now you understand that's what we mean by emotional safety. I will hold a safe, I will be emotionally present and safe for you to experience any emotion that you need to experience right now. And I will help you process those emotions in any way that you need it. And I'm not going anywhere.
Mm.
That is one of the greatest gifts we can give each other. And it's infinite and it's free. And it costs us nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything changes.
And so when you're in those conflict situations, this is starting to click now and starting to come together, right? So I'm angry. Let's go back to what you said to me before. Okay. It doesn't matter what I'm angry about, right?
Right. So I'm angry. I'm not going to attribute any kind of cause. All I'm going to do, and it doesn't matter whether you're angry at me, because we can't do anything about it until you calm down. So I got to calm you down first. And when I'm teaching my graduate students, I say de-escalate, then problem solve. Too often people go right to problem solving, and that's emotionally invalidating.
Yeah.
Which gets into something that's really interesting. I'll just touch on this quickly. The reason that we emotionally invalidate, the reason that we go to problem solving, the reason that we try to justify, appease, excuse, or whatever when people are angry is because we are anxious ourselves about the other person's emotional experience, and we are unconsciously trying to soothe our own anxiety because we are emotionally unaware.
Wow. Dig a little deeper there. Like keep going. That's a great rabbit hole. I love this emotional stuff because everybody feels like they've got it. Everybody feels like they know it.
But they don't.
Until you're in a situation that's going haywire and you can't point at why. And this is usually why.
Right. So let me back up a little bit. And everybody's heard about active listening. Most people don't even know what it is. It was developed by a psychologist by the name of Thomas Gordon. In the 1960s, he was a student and then a colleague of the great humanist psychologist Carl Rogers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I won't go into all the history of this. You can go onto my website and read. I've got an article that lays out active listening and nonviolent communication and why they're so screwed up. But he had the right ideas, but it was misconstrued. And then as the human potential movement started in the late 50s and early 60s, people grabbed onto Gordon's work, completely misunderstanding what he was doing, just like people completely misunderstood what Carl Rogers was doing. And they perverted it. So you get into this now, even today, at the university where I teach, I have professors teaching active listening. What I hear you saying is, or what I think you're feeling is, this passive, patronizing, rude, manipulative I statements.
Yeah. And they tend to focus on the topic. What I find is people focus on the content of the words again.
They're focusing on themselves.
Mm.
They're soothing their own anxiety when they use an I statement. And so for the person who's really emotionally upset, all they hear is the other person talking about themselves, and it just makes them even angrier.
Mm.
So that's why we use the you statement. Because when I am technically what I'm trying to do here is reflect your emotional experience from your frame of reference, not from my frame of reference, which is why I'm going to use a you statement. So I'm not going to soothe my own anxiety, but mostly because I don't have any anxiety. And when you learn how to use a you statement and reflect back other people's emotions, you won't have anxiety either. Your anxiety around emotions go completely away. So when I say, April, you're really angry, you're really frustrated, you're upset, you're sad, you feel betrayed, you feel completely abandoned and disconnected and unloved. I'm totally reflecting your experience and helping you process those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it all works. And I don't have to get involved in your stuff. And then finally, after about 90 seconds, you'll say, yeah, exactly. And you'll nod your head, your shoulders drop, you'll sigh, you'll have a couple of involuntary relaxation responses. And I said, okay. What else should we do about this? And open up a dialogue, a conversation about what's going on.
And there's a reason why you say it takes 90 seconds, right? Can you go back to that for a second?
Actually,
you alluded to it before.
It probably takes a lot less than that. I say 90 seconds. It's funny because when I wrote my fourth book, De-escalate, and you know, my publishers, Beyond Words, Atria, Simon & Schuster, they I said, you know, you can do this in about 30 seconds. And they said, no one will ever buy that.
We got to bump it up to 90.
That's how it happened.
That's awesome. But what I love about this is, right, what you're alluding to, this is going to take a very short amount of time.
People
will not believe that. They're right. No one will believe that an emotion is that fleeting and that short. So can you kind of dive into why that's the case? Like, why is it that short? You mentioned it before, but it's worth unpacking a little.
So emotion is a, We aren't born with emotions. Here's another big one. We're not born with emotions. Humans are not born with emotions, period. Get that out of your head. Emotions are constructed. This is Feldman Barrett. I'm channeling Lisa Feldman Barrett.
She had a really great book recently.
And then you couple that with all, I mean, that
so good.
Her book really connected a lot of dots for me. But here's the deal. We're born with affect. Affect is the biophysiological stuff that happens in the brain that allows us to either experience pleasure or pain, essentially. Pleasantness, unpleasantness. I use Sylvan Tompkins' non-affect model. He was a psychologist in the 60s. The reason that I use his model is because that's what the neuroscientists are using. A lot of other people have said, oh, they're only, like Ekman says, they're only two affect or three affect. I think Ekman's not credible. Let me just leave it at that. But Tompkins has done, and you can get all his research is online and it's free and you can read as much as you want. Sylvan, S-Y-L-V-A-N, Tompkins, C-O-M-K-I-N-S. Anyways, in this non-affect model, so the way emotions work is we have a process known as interoception, where our brain is constantly monitoring everything going on within us, both in the brain and outside in the rest of the body. And so we're getting like goosebumps or flushed skin or respiration rate goes up or heartbeat changes. Where the brain is constantly monitoring metabolic load. Then what will happen is in certain circumstances, the interoception will trigger an affective response. So let's take anger, for example. Anger, rage is one of the nine basic affects. And so the amygdala fires, with part of not the total rage circuit, but part of it. And all of a sudden, we'll start to have this affective experience. Now, if we don't have emotional database, if we don't have our emotions aren't well developed, then we fall back on reactivity because our prefrontal cortex cannot process what's going on and can't make choices about what's going on. What should happen at about 18 months is we should be developing words that are associated with the various types of anger. So you can have anger, annoyance, irritation, frustration, rage, you know, hatred, just a whole number of English words that are different kinds of anger that we should be developing. And we should be able to associate those words with different affective experiences we're having in the moment. So we're associating words with feelings. Mm-hmm. Then what can happen is when we start to feel the anger, the rage, our prefrontal cortex can dip into the emotional database and say, oh, I'm feeling angry right now. And the ability to take that affective experience and concretize it into consciousness is something that only humans can do. No other animals can do this. And it allows us to do three things. One, we become aware of it consciously. Two, we can start to draw inferences about why I am feeling this way. I can look around for cause and effect, what's causing me to be angry. And four, and most importantly, I can communicate my anger externally to other people. Can't do that if you don't have emotion. Mm-hmm. And what I've experienced as a mediator and a peacemaker in high conflict cases is a condition called alexithymia. And it happens to everybody. If you read the literature, they say, well, it's a subclinical condition associated with all these different things. No. Everybody gets alexithymic when they're angry. Alexithymia is the inability to recognize, articulate, and be aware of your own emotions.
Mm.
And if you've ever seen anybody in a rage, they are so mad they cannot articulate. They don't even know that they're mad. And so what's happening is their emotional centers of the brain have completely dominated their prefrontal cortex. They become alexithymic. There are all kinds of studies that show all the bad things that happen when you're alexithymic. All the bad behaviors we see are caused in this alexithymic condition. And so what we want to do is reduce that alexithymic tendency by lending our prefrontal cortex to this upset person. Now, the other thing to understand is that no emotion comes all by itself. Emotions always come in groups. And so when you are labeling emotions, you want to understand the layers of the emotions.
I like you so much. And then I love that you went there. I like you so much.
And then you reflect back layer to layer to layer. So you might not be angry. You might be sad. Let's suppose that somebody close to you has passed away, died, and you're really sad and you're grief-stricken. And I say something like this. I say, oh, so April, huh? You're so sad. You're feeling a lot of grief and loss, and you feel empty and abandoned. And you're worried. You don't know what you're going to do. And you feel really angry. that you're left behind. You're really pissed off about it, and you're frustrated, and you're sad. Now, most people will experience grief, and they will have no idea that those other five or six emotions are underneath what they're really feeling. But you'd be amazed at how many times people are angry underneath the sadness and the grief and the loss.
And that inability to recognize that, that's something that's worth calling out here. That inability to recognize that and to tease it apart. I give this example of gray or brown paint all the time. It's like you have a container and you're pouring all these different colors of paint in it, you know, blue and red and yellow. And ultimately, when you're in that situation of grief or one of these complex emotional situations that includes a lot of different emotions, if you're not skilled at it, or if you haven't worked at it enough, you might look at that and look at the paint and say, I don't know, it's like brown.
Exactly.
But what you don't realize is there's blue in there, and there's yellow in there, and there's red in there. And it's worth it to label each one of them separately, because you get more information. You feel so much, even if you're just doing it to yourself, you feel so much more understood.
Exactly. And that is, it's huge. So here's the beauty that I've learned, and what I teach, is that this is not hard to master. It is really easy to master this stuff. And here's the secret. So remember the technique. We're going to ignore the words, read the emotions, reflect back the emotions with a simply used statement. We're going to start in psychologically safe environments, very low risk, where if we screw up, we're not going to be embarrassed and humiliated and wish that a hole would just suck us up and we would never be seen or heard from again. We're going to go into Starbucks.
Great.
That's my favorite lab. Going to Starbucks, and you're going to order whatever you're going to order. And you give your credit card to the barista and you say something like, wow, you look really happy today. Just like that. And that's all you say, and you stop. And now you have your white lab coat metaphorically on, and you're the observer, and you watch what happens. And what will happen is that barista will, you have just listened that barista into existence. That person has just handled 300 customers in the last 2 hours. They're usually happy people hired by Starbucks, right? Personable. But you have just validated this person's existence. First customer to do this probably in 3 weeks, or probably ever. And that person is going to light up and say, yeah, I'm really happy. And then they're going to start telling you their whole life story. And everybody behind you is going to get really angry.
And then you turn around to them and then you say, you look really angry. I'm just kidding.
But here's the key. You watch the response, and do this for three or four times for 2 weeks. Go to Starbucks. If you go out to eat, do it with a server. Servers these days are incredibly stressed. And they're really angry because they're overworked and underpaid. So you go to a restaurant and you say to the server, you just watch, observe, what's going on with this person? And more likely than not, there's going to be stress. And so you say, you're really looking stressed out and tired and a little pissed off tonight. And they'll say, yeah. And my boss, the people didn't call in, they've all quit and I got to do it all myself. And so you're really feeling put upon and unappreciated and unsupported. Yeah. And it's really kind of pissing you off. It makes you sad, too. And you're tired. Yeah, thanks. You'll get the best service of your life for the rest of the night.
What do you do in those situations where it's a person who hasn't experienced emotional safety and you say, you look really stressed out, you look really tired right now, and they like you can see them kind of recoil because they're like, huh, nope, I better button it up, right?
Oh,
like they don't realize that you're a safe person.
That's right. Every now and then, you will come on a little too fast and a little too strong. And this happens more with people you know, or business relationships or personal relationships or friendships or even acquaintances. And you come on just a little too strong. And here's a person who's emotionally shut down. They're emotionally unavailable. They spent their whole lives building up this massive wall around them so nobody can see who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And you fly through that wall like Superwoman. And you're right there in their face and you see them for exactly who they are and you just scare the crap out of them.
Yeah, you're talking to somebody who has anxious avoidant attachment. I'm just going to like disclose that about myself. So I'm totally that person. Keep going.
So you have just scared them because you created this instant intimacy with them that they are not only not used to, but they have learned that emotional intimacy is scary and frightening and hurtful because that's all they've experienced in their lives. And they're going to say, "Whoa!" They're going to back off and say, who do you think you are, my psychologist, my psychiatrist, my therapist? Or don't do that stuff to me. Okay, so that's just an indicator that, number one, you were very successful, too successful. And two, you were a little kludgy, you weren't subtle enough. So this will happen to me in conflict mediations that I'm called into, and I will be ethic labeling somebody, and every now and then, who the heck do you think you are? Some guy will usually do this. And I can't be intimidated, so I just smile and say, I'm just listening to you. And I back off. I let his brain rest for 10 minutes, and I come back again. Only this time I come back a little more subtle. This thing really pisses you off. I'll just stop. One word. You're really pissed off. You're really angry. This is frustrating. Yeah. Nailed it. I got the yeah. And so then I can decide, well, do I want to go deeper, or do I need to go deeper, or do I just, you know, leave it where it is? So when you get the pushback, which happens rarely, but it happens, just recognize, one, very successful, good job. Two, a little too pushy. Back off. Come at it again in 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
And this is really interesting, because what it's getting at and where people's minds might go is, this sounds like you're doing a lot in order to get that other person to respond. Like, I'm having to go to these lengths to, like, you know, come back after 10 minutes, whatever. And what I want to point out here is something that we talked about at the very beginning around coming into this conversation is your intention to get to a good outcome, right? You mentioned, like, are you coming in because you need to be validated, or are you coming in truly to get to a good outcome? Because if your goal is to get to a good outcome, coming at it with the finesse that you're talking about and the tact and just the sensitivity maybe that you're talking about is what's going to get you there. It's not, you might feel compelled to have a different tactic if your true goal coming into the conversation is, I need to show that I'm right. I need to be validated. My feelings were wronged, et cetera. So I want to make that distinction, because if this feels hard, it might be time to kind of check what's the goal you're coming into this with, truly, like, no fault, but like, really, what's the goal you're coming to the conversation with? Because it might feel heavy if the goal is for you to be validated.
Yeah. You need to be in a place where it's more important for you to serve the other person than it is for you to be served yourself. Mm-hmm. And now there are some times when that's not possible. You can be in an intimate relationship and your spouse blows up on you, and you've got to get that person calm, and you feel like you've been totally violated. But it's important for you to get calmed down, in which case you take a deep breath, you know, tip, right? Temperature, breathing, breathe, and physical exercise, whatever you have to do to calm down. And then ethic label that person until they get calm. And then, believe it or not, you can coach even an unschooled, untrained person how to listen to your emotions. Mm. And what you would say is, could you do me a favor? So April, we'll do it. So April, I know you haven't ever seen this kind of stuff before, but I would really like you to help me process some stuff that I'm feeling. Would you be willing to do that for me?
Sure.
Yeah. All I want you to do is just, I'm going to give you a feeling that I'm having, and I just want you to feed it back to me. So I'll say, I'm really angry. And then you'll say, Doug, you are really feeling angry and frustrated. Just something like that. And we'll just go through a few emotions and we'll see how it goes. So April, you know, right now I'm really angry.
Doug, you're feeling really angry.
Yeah, and I'm really frustrated.
You're feeling really frustrated. I almost said,
yeah, I'm not feeling heard.
I like
people are ignoring me.
You feel like people aren't hearing you. You feel like you're being ignored.
Yeah, it's really unfair. In fact, I feel betrayed, and that's what's really pissing me off.
Yeah, you feel mad because you feel betrayed. You feel like people don't understand you.
Yeah. And I feel really sad because the connection I thought I had doesn't seem to be there. No one's there for me.
You feel alone, and you feel like that makes you sad.
Yeah. How hard was that?
I found some knee-jerk reactions to want to like slip into the sort of old way of doing things for sure. But you know, once you kind of get the, I don't know, formula down or something, it gets to feel more natural.
Yeah. It's not hard. And if you have a need to be listened to, just coach somebody in the way that we just did it. And it, that works just as well. It doesn't have to be this spontaneous, artful thing. You can just coach somebody in helping you label your emotions.
Yeah. This is so interesting because here we're talking about, you know, and it goes back to what you said about emotionality versus being rational. We're talking about these, you know, conflict and communication, which seems like it should be such a rational topic to be talking about. And really what this episode has been is a masterclass in understanding and being able to dive into emotion itself on a biological level, and then also just on a level of felt experience and how we relate to each other. It's so interesting just how critical that role is. And this is the case in nearly any topic that we hit on where emotion plays a big role. You just don't realize.
I've decided that this is the foundational skill of life. Mm-hmm. If you can master emotions and master emotional listening, that will serve you in so many powerful ways. You'll raise healthy. The studies show that children who have parents who affect label them are usually 3 to 4 grade levels ahead of their peers by the time they're in the 9 or 10 years old. It's showing that the kids who have been affect labeled tend to have superior academic performance. They tend to be socially and far more mature beyond their years. They are well liked by their friends, their teachers, and they adapt well to stress, as opposed to kids who are emotionally invalidated. Mm. What I found in the prison work that I do when I'm training murderers to be peacemakers, I've watched my students stop gang riots on their tracks using affect labeling, emotionally labeling emotions. I've watched them stop violence by simply using these techniques. And in fact, we get letters from wardens saying that they can't believe the violence in the yards has decreased like it has because of Prison of Peace, because these are some of the fundamental skills of peacemaking. Mm. This stuff works, and it's based on science. There's no BS here, no pop psychology. It's the real deal. The problem is that we've been trained the wrong way. And so, for example, you'll notice that when I was affect labeling, it would seem like I'm interrupting. That's a convention from conversation that we learned at 2 years old. Don't be selfish. Don't interrupt. Don't be rude. Good rules, but we are not in conversation when we're listening. We're in listening. Listening rules are very different than conversation rules. And we can't apply the rules of conversation to the rules of listening. Then there's the problem of, well, why should I have to tell somebody how they're feeling? Don't they know how they're feeling? Well, no, they're alexithymic. In fact, if you ask them how they're feeling, they're just going to get angrier because they can't access their emotional database to the degree that they have one, and they're just going to get more upset. And then finally, people say, well, gee, when you tell people how they're feeling, that seems like rude and manipulative and patronizing. Well, let me answer that question by asking you, April, when I affect label you, what did that feel like to you?
It feels validating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So these are the common concerns that people have about this stuff. And it's all based on their own insecurities and anxieties. It has nothing to do with listening to other people's emotions. So that's the hardest part of learning this, is overcoming your own anxieties around this stuff, because it's so counterintuitive what you think you know about listening to people. Mm-hmm. Ignore the words, listen to the emotions.
Yeah. So that's actually was going to be my next question. As we're wrapping this up, I want to make sure people know those steps again. Can you say them one more time about what it means to listen to another person into existence?
Number one, ignore the words. Make it white noise. You do that for two reasons. One, you don't want to get triggered yourself. And two, you want to free up the bandwidth in your brain to do the rest. Number two, read the emotional data fields. You are hardwired for doing this. This is an innate skill. You just have to get out of your way. Our whole educational system, everything we learn, is all designed not to have us learn how to read emotions. We can do it because we've been able to do it for millions of years as hominids, long before language evolved. So you're going to read the emotions, and the way you do that is to sit in silence for a moment and allow your brain to process, and emotions will start coming into your consciousness. And then as they come into your consciousness, you reflect those emotions to the speaker, to the upset person, with a simple you statement. You don't use I statements and you don't ask questions. All you do is say, you're frustrated, you're angry, whatever it is. If they say, no, I'm not angry, You're not wrong. You're probably right. But they can't access that yet. So you just come back with another emotion. So for don't worry about making mistakes. You can never make a mistake doing this. But let me give you an example. I'll say, you're really angry and frustrated. No, I'm not angry. You're frustrated. Yeah, I'm really frustrated. And you feel like you're being ignored and you're feeling sad and you feel like you've been let down. Yeah. And it's really pissing you off. Yeah, it's really pissing me off. I'm really angry. Yeah, you're really angry. Finally, they could access the anger. So the fact that they said, I'm not angry, even though it's obvious they are, simply means they can't access that. And I'm lending them my prefrontal cortex to help them work through and process it to the point where they can. Their prefrontal cortex is, oh, yeah, angry. Yeah, I've got that big time right now.
I love it. That's so helpful. What does it mean in the context of your work to be psychologically strong?
To be able to walk into any situation or be in any situation with any human being and maintain a sense of serenity, compassion, and calmness inside yourself, no matter what's going on around you on the outside.
I love that. There's so much that's encapsulated in that definition. I love it. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
I've got a webpage set up on my website for people. It's a bit.ly link, so it's not my website address. It's Doug Knoll, DougNoll.co, not .com, .co / psychological strength, all one word.
Awesome.
And on that page, free to expensive, whatever you want. And it gives you access into my website. There's a free ebook you can get. You can buy my book, Deescalate. You can buy I have a number of video courses from relatively inexpensive to fairly expensive. And it just depends on what you're interested in. So check it out. Check out the website. And if people want to email me, I'm a one-man guy. I don't have an entourage. So Doug, D-O-U-G, at DougKnoll.com.
Amazing.
For all my own emails.
This has been so practically helpful. I mean, it's just you're giving us tips that we can literally go out and say the words that you fed to us and practice and get better. And I absolutely love that. And all backed by science and research, which is just music to my ears. Doug, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for being with us for this episode.
This has been fun, April. Appreciate it.
Amazing. And for those of you listening, if you are interested in going deeper in this topic, I've got a few more resources for you coming up in the next bit. So stay tuned. You guys, so I feel like I need to say this whole notion of emotional intelligence and everything that fits underneath it is something that I'm so passionate about. And because we spent so much time speaking with Doug about it, there's just a lot to unpack here. I'm having a really hard time narrowing down my list of resources to direct you to because there's a lot that I could dive into. So I'm going to try to just narrow things down into the things that I think are most actionable given what Doug talked about. So first, he highlighted the importance of being able to label our own emotions, right? If we can't recognize our own emotions, if we can't get ourselves in a good position first, it makes the techniques that he talked about much more difficult. So there's an exercise that I always encourage people to do if they're new to labeling their own emotions and validating their own emotions, or if you're just in a situation where things are really complex and you're having a tough time sifting through them. So go over to Google, doesn't matter, just search on Google for the words wheel of emotions or emotion wheel. You're going to get a circular image that has a bunch of different emotions going around it. And what this does is it gives you a starting point of, in some sense, the emotions that it's possible for a human being to feel. So once you've got that wheel of emotions, then I want you to pick a situation in the recent past, something that was complex. Maybe it's even about, you pick the situation about how you're feeling about COVID right now. I mean, it's complex, right? Multifaceted. Pick that situation, get it, you know, clear in your mind. Think about your position in that situation, how you're feeling. Then I want you to go to that wheel of emotions, and I want you to just randomly pick four emotions. Doesn't matter, just pick four. And then I want you to ask yourself the question, okay, here I am in this situation, say it's COVID. Here I am in this situation. If I did feel, insert one of the emotions that you chose, happy. If I did feel happy, what about the situation would make me feel that way? Or if you want to say it a different way, let's say a person felt happy about COVID. What about the situation might make that person feel happy? What you're doing is you're trying that emotion on for size. You're not saying that you do feel that way. You're saying that you might. Maybe it's possible. And then you're using, as Doug mentioned, your prefrontal cortex. You're thinking about it. You're not feeling your way into it. You're really just reasoning through it. What about the situation might make me feel that way? How about lonely? If I felt lonely during COVID, what about it might make me feel that way? Or angry? Any of those emotions, pick four. And just try them on for size and see how they resonate. The more you do this, the more you'll get better at dissecting your own experience and understanding your own emotions. The second resource that I want to mention, you know, I gave the example while I was talking to Doug about the gray paint example or the sludgy looking paint color example. I actually wrote a blog post on exactly that on our Peak Mind blog, and I'm going to link to it below along with all the other resources from this episode. I'm going to link to them below in the episode description and on the show notes page. That blog post goes through what I mean by when you're sifting through your emotions and you're trying to figure out, okay, this paint looks gray, it looks sludgy, meaning there's a lot of different emotions in there or a lot of colors in there. How do I begin to sift them apart to start to understand them? You'll be amazed at how much more validated, how much more clarity you have when you can really understand your full emotional landscape. So check out that blog post if that's something you're interested in. Finally, I want to highlight a past episode of the podcast. So this is episode 221, and it has kind of a funny title. It's titled How to Learn How to Win Every Argument. So in this episode with Doug, we also talked about the importance of the mindset that you come into the conflict with. What's your goal? Are you trying to get to a point of resolution, or are you trying to get yourself validated or make yourself feel like you're right? And in this episode, I talk a lot about that approach to conflict. So when we can come into conflict with the goal of getting to an understanding or getting to a good resolution, not with the goal of proving that we're right or validating ourselves. That's how you win every argument. And I dive into it much more in depth and get it into some cool research in that episode, but I wanted to highlight that one as well. So again, all of those resources as well as Doug's website are linked in this episode description and in the show notes page for this episode. So feel free to click around, get more resources if that is something that you are interested in. Once again, today we heard from Doug Knoll about the importance of emotions in conflict and in communication. Doug, that was an incredible conversation. I so appreciate you being here. If you're listening, high five, friend. It was so great. If you want to learn more about Doug's work, you can visit the link in this episode description. And I want to thank each and every one of you who has left us a rating or a review on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, I would really appreciate it if you would. And finally, as we're closing out, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.